Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and good evening and welcome. You've turned into a conversation between artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guest. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello again and welcome. Food is our theme for today, and Zeke's Island Cafe is our place. Marvelous chef Jason Stewart, known as Stu, his wife Jessica, they started it in February of this year. Zeke's Island Cafe, Bill Douglas turned me onto it. Kudos to him, marvelous artist. And so we ventured out to enjoy it, and it's just a delight. And I got talking to the chef. And the chef is an artist, and I thought, what better way to talk about food and art and companionship and that wonderful thing that food does to us. And Jason Stewart is with us, and Jason, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Except I shouldn't call you Jason, I should call you Chef Stu.
Chef Stu will work just fine, thanks.
Chef Stu, is that S-T-U or S-T-E-W?
The Chef Stu is S-T-U.
S-T-U, very good. Where did that come from, Stewart?
Yeah. We just pulled it right out of the name, but we didn't want to spell it the same.
Yeah.
The last name is S-T-E-W-A-R-T, but that was just too corny, so we changed it to S-T-U for the chef part.
S-T-U, very good. Everyone has a nickname.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Welcome. Being an artist of food, I've talked to a number of chefs. My wife's a marvelous cook. I'm pretty good with eggs and bread, and that's about it. But where does this food artistry come from? How were you a little boy, you know, making sandwiches, cooking scrambled eggs? I mean, where does this bug, this desire for cooking come from?
I'd have to say I'm a born tinkerer. I would tinker with anything, tear it apart to see how it works kind of thing. Got me in a lot of trouble, but I discovered so many amazing things. And I guess the term latchkey kid when I was younger, my parents were doing amazing things in the world, and I had some time on my own to discover things myself. So I would invent things in the kitchen for dinner. It started off kind of over-manipulating mashed potatoes and turning them into something else, and then it was doctoring the boxed macaroni and cheese, and I never saw it going anywhere. It was just fun.
What did you do?
Oh, I don't know, just kind of take whatever ingredients were laying around and mix things together and see how it came out. Sometimes it was horrible.
Oh, sure.
But sometimes it was amazing. And eventually someone would say, "You made this?" And I'd say, "Well, yeah."
Applause.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an actor. Huh. Yeah. So how did you get into cooking? How did you get into chefing?
I had my eye set on this amazing drum set that I had to have. It was about my fifth attempt at playing drums. So I had to have a job to pay for those. And so I got a job in a kitchen, the Davenport Country Club of all places, washing dishes.
Ooh.
Couldn't wait. Long hair, rock and roll t-shirt, you know, the whole works. And within just a couple of weeks, I was having more fun than anyone else in the kitchen. So, yeah. I kind of got a feel for things. I got to enjoy the environment. And it wasn't long before they put a knife in my hand. And I really haven't looked back since.
Huh. What did they have you do? Sous chef or chopping vegetables?
Yeah, it was more along the lines of
back in the mailroom.
Yeah, chopping parsley. Mm. I learned the fine art of chopping everything small because no one else wanted to take the time to do it. But I became the traditional fry cook, cooking catfish as we would in Iowa. And then as I kind of became proficient in those things, it came naturally to me, or it came naturally to me. They would just give me more to do. And the more I did, the more I enjoyed.
Yeah. Huh, ratatouille. Did you develop a food memory? Did you develop a knowledge of what happens when you combine different ingredients or different heats?
You know, it's interesting how that works. In high school, I think I dropped out of the chemistry class 3 times over the course of my 4 years. It just didn't make sense to me. But for some reason, food chemistry makes sense to me, but I didn't know that's what it was. It just clicked. So I can see what's going to happen to the different molecules and the fats and the oils and the flour and the sugar and the moisture and the caramelization, all these different aspects. I can picture it in my head. I can tell you what's going to happen before it happens. It's wonderful. I didn't know that was chemistry, but it is.
Is being a chef a lot of chemistry then?
It can be. You know, being a chef can be a lot of things. I love the art aspect of being a chef. I was actually going to go to art school. Kansas City Art Institute. It was an exceptional experience, applying and being accepted there. A lot of my friends were artists and were dying to go there, and a few of them were going there. So I had actually been accepted, drove down to get an apartment, and I had an 8-hour quiet time on the way back. And I had realized in that 8 hours that I was having more fun in the kitchen trying to save money for art school than I ever had in the dark room. I was going to go for photography. I loved the dark room. I loved the camera, but I was having more fun. It was more a part of me to do the dishwashing and the cooking and the grilling and the cleaning. Was, I don't know, it was attached to me somehow. Huh. So in that, I drove 8 hours home, got home, called Kansas City, said, sorry, thank you so much for the opportunity, and entered the chef program here.
Oh, interesting. What a big choice for you.
Huge.
Golly, yeah. Did you regret it?
No, not at all. It wasn't long before I realized that this was the right choice. It was the right medium for me to express what was important to me. Because the thing I liked about photography was people. Sharing pictures of people and places and things with other people.
The audience.
Right. In the food industry, it's about connection. Connection happens around food no matter what. The ultimate family experience is supposedly around the table. I don't know if we experience it that much these days. So we go out to eat. So I get to go out there and kind of help be the connector of people. And at the same time, I get to connect with those people.
The facilitator.
Oh, it's so much fun.
You're like the director, producer, organizer, maitre d', chef, all of that rolled into one.
Well, I'm not, but there are a lot of people that join me in this. Always have. Always about the people that you're with. The team that's with you, that you're with, yeah. I've always preferred to say that I work with people than that they work for me or I work for them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I can't do it. I can make some things, and I can definitely see things that other people can't, but I have to invite people into it to actually make those a reality.
You can't do it yourself?
Yeah, I try, but it ultimately has to go to someone else. So.
Yeah, I'd like to thank my team who's blocking for me while I'm throwing these passes downfield. Yeah, so do you go to school to be a chef then?
I did. I entered a program here. It was a fledgling program that has grown into a huge program over at Scott Community mm-hmm. College. Chef
Culinary
Brad Scott
Arts, yeah.
Does an amazing job over there, not just inviting students in, but also follow through. I mean, they've built quite a facility over there. I think the Quad Cities offers some really good opportunity for those who would want to do this. Who are those people? That's hard to say, you know. I did that for about, I think, 2 semesters. And it wasn't quite as challenging as I had hoped. And so I decided to take another leap of faith, and I went and applied to Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island. There are basically 2 schools on the East Coast that are worth fighting over. Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, mm-hmm. would be the comparable school. They have two different philosophies, and I just chose one over the other without knowing.
Yeah. What are those two philosophies? Hand building and wheel throwing?
You know, yeah. What I discovered, I think I made the right choice for myself. I would have probably done very well at either one. Just they have great ideas there, and they have great people that want to move people forward. So that's good. CIA's approach is to start at A, and when you get done, you're at Z, and you should know A through Z. And that's awesome. I mean, it's a great way to educate. Johnson & Wales has kind of a different approach of kind of throw everybody into the middle and see who fights their way out to the top, and then kind of delegates the education from that level. They have a lot of fellow programs, a lot of assistant TAs and things like that built into their system so that those who want a challenge can get it. They have a pretty high freshman dropout rate because I think when people see the reality of it, then they move on. Hmm. And they have that opportunity right away instead of a year into a program. Hmm. So I really enjoyed the fact that I could go in there and kind of just find my way, find my place, and there was somewhere to go when I got there. Hmm. And there was also a place to go for those who were like still trying to figure it out a little bit.
Hmm. So
two different worlds.
You went in thinking you were going to be a steak and catfish chef, and you ended up being a Caribbean chef, or does it evolve? Is it that kind of rooms?
Boy, can I tell you a story?
Do.
I spent the first 5 years of my life as a cook, wannabe chef, pretty much convinced I was no good at it because I was working with phenomenal people and just took it for granted. They were just the people I worked with in the kitchens. So I was always trying to attain their level.
That's good.
And no, always falling short, constantly falling short. We talk about the disappointment in this business. You're only as good as your next meal. Well, we're going to discuss your last meal if it wasn't quite up to par. So I had a lot of those discussions. So I went into this program on the East Coast thinking I was a fairly mediocre cook, but I really wanted a good education. What I found when I got there was being in the presence of those people for 5 years, pouring into me. I was way at the top when I got to the actual culinary school. I had no problem swinging a 4.0 GPA, you know, Dean's List. Was assigned to special caterers and things that, you know, only certain students would. And I had no idea that was coming. It was a great surprise. I think it's really added to my kind of approach to life to get out there and try things not knowing what you're going to get into.
Huh. You don't have any fear of the unknown?
Oh, I don't. Fear seems to be the wrong word for that. Unknown is excitement. That's what it instills in me is excitement. It's undiscovered.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. So you went through this school for two semesters. And
The first one was two semesters. Then I went to culinary school and got a degree.
Got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
2 year degree, 4 year degree?
At the time, it was a 2 year degree. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think they do. They now have bachelors of
culinary arts
now. Yeah, absolutely.
Marvelous. So then what do you do?
So then you go make your mark in the world.
Right.
Which I, you know, I went out and did everything I possibly could. I originally went back to the country club and served there for a while as an assistant chef of some kind. I really didn't have a title, but I was having a lot of fun and learning a lot, which was great because that was that same group of people that had poured into me and now saw me come back with a skill set and with a mind of my own and something to bring to the table instead of just constantly learning from them. I was able to kind of add to the team and round that out. That was great. Then the Lady Luck Casino came into town, and they were hiring people. I took a job there and learned a lot there.
Like what?
Well, it was a totally different atmosphere than I'd been around. Country clubs and casinos are completely different. The executive chef team had actually been shipped down to Biloxi to train. So then I was just under that level. I was some kitchen supervisor. I forget what my title was. So the corporate executive chef, who was from Europe, I'm not sure where, but I had a hard time understanding him, especially his handwriting, and all his recipes were handwritten, was training me for that site while they were being trained at a different site to do the management. So I actually had the privilege of opening the entire thing until the day before the actual grand opening. So I trained all the staff and I learned all the recipes and I brought in all the product. We actually had to hand check all of the small wares, two semi-trailers, sheet by sheet, line by line. And I went, wow, this is what it takes? So I really loved the idea of startup at that point. That was my first big project. And I've kind of been a startup transition chef ever since then. I'm a team builder. I like to pull people together. I like a big project that we can work through and, you know, kind of get gnarly with and twist things around and see what works and what doesn't, because you've got room. You've got parameter there. And if you look over I didn't intentionally seek out to do that, but those are kind of the jobs I landed after.
Oh, interesting. Fascinating. Yeah. You're like a team builder, like you're taking over mm-hmm. something and is taking it from the ground up.
I love that part.
So then the chef came back on the day of the opening?
Yes. So then the executive chef team came back and they had a mix of people from the Quad Cities and Biloxi. And so I knew some of them, didn't know some of the other ones. There was four or five chefs and sous chefs. And within, I think, 3 days, you know, it was just a completely different place. And I didn't really have a place to fit. And was I in the way or was I not helping? Or I'm not sure. And because they had a way of, they'd just been trained how to do things. And so it wasn't very long before we decided it wasn't the best arrangement.
Too bad. Yeah. How interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I moved on, which was great. I realized then at that point, I'm a project guy. The project was over. The place was open. It's time to move on.
And you've gathered all that experience mm-hmm. and you've gone through all of that. And your menu, your own personal menu, is expanding all the time.
Yeah, exponentially.
Exponentially. Do you have a good food memory?
I'd say so. I'd say I have quite a tool belt to pick from. I think it comes from running the smaller operations where you had limited availability of product, but you had to come up with a feature every day kind of thing.
Sure.
Little pubs and things that I did. And you just pull, okay, what are we going to make this into this week? And you'd start to pull from different recipes and ideas and experiences, going out to eat, you know, understanding how, always picking apart what you're eating, at least in your mind.
Sure.
And say, how did they do this?
Yeah. When I go out to eat with my wife to a new restaurant, I'll watch her as she's eating and I can see her mind turning. It's like, oh, there's the cinnamon, there's the garlic, there's the oregano, there's the spices. She can taste all that going through and she's analyzing the flavors and how it's cooked. It's a analytical thing. I think we all do that. I edit papers the same way. You just kind of know what's going on. Interesting mm-hmm. characteristic. We're talking with Chef Stu of Zeke's Island Cafe. Let's take a little break right now. This is fascinating. We're going to get into how you opened up your own restaurant here in town. We'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Augustana College Art Museum on 7th Avenue in Rock Island from November 17th through February 14th, Art Matters, the Triennial Art Faculty Exhibition. Hours are noon to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. At the Art Space Gallery in Building 4 on the Black Hawk College campus in Moline through November 14th, Juicy, paintings by Mary Zarin. Hours are 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. In the Morrissey Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through November 14th, paintings by Margaret Babbitt. Hours are 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. And in the Cattage Gallery at St. Ambrose through December 12th, Anonymous Women, photographs by Patty Carroll. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum at 225 West 2nd Street in Davenport, through January 4th, African American Art Since 1950, Perspectives from the David D. Driscoll Center. Through January 25th, Against the Grain, Wood Art from the Figge Collection. Through April 30th, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursdays. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of November, Digital Works by Lucas Burns. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 on Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday. at Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of the year. Multimedia works by Linda Kelty and oils by Catherine Moneysmith. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in Davenport through the end of the year, pastels by Diane Bruce and photography by Marjorie Franklin. Hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. At the Quad City Arts Gallery at 1715 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through December 19th, ink drawings by Nadine D'Angelo and acrylics by Teresa Message. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturdays from 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the airport in the Moline International Airport through the end of the year, black and white photography by Michael Johnson, wood turnings by the Quad Cities Woodturners. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
And we're back. Zeke's Island Cafe is with us, Chef Jason Stewart, Chef Stu, his wife Jessica, and he run this marvelous cafe. It's really not a restaurant. It's like a cafe. You got a dozen tables. You gotta walk in. You gotta order it. You can see you guys behind the counter. You've got that large board with all the menus going on. I always end up ordering the same thing. I find something I like, and it's like, why do you want to order something you may not even know about? Just take what you like. Anyway, and you're on Facebook. You don't have a website. That's very interesting. And you've been open since February on Kimberly Road, right by where the old Popeye's chicken was and an Oriental restaurant before that, right up there across. So why a Jamaican restaurant? Why a Caribbean restaurant? Why not a steak and potatoes restaurant? Why not a catfish restaurant?
Well, that's very easy, because we thought it was a pasta place. And so we opened one in that same building. It didn't go very well. It went fine for the people that liked it, but there were a lot of pasta places. Wasn't much to choose from there in that spot. So I thought, why not pasta? So I throw that in and whatever. That didn't work out so well. I don't think I was committed to the project. That's easy to see. And so on the heels of closing that restaurant in January, I said to my wife, what if we did something amazing there, something that's our heart? We want to sail the world. We want to see every continent and country we can possibly see. We hope someday to own a boat large enough to invite people to go with us and just travel the seas. So I said, what if we open an island restaurant? And she said, interesting, tell me more. And so we started discussing what it would look like inside, what kind of food we would do. It's actually, the main menu right now is Pacific and Caribbean. And we're looking to kind of expand that. My wife has a wonderful term that, it's an island cafe, but we don't discriminate because continents are kind of really just big islands anyways. So we've met so many amazing people. We wanted to travel the world. We took that idea, put it into a restaurant, and within weeks, we knew people from all over the world. They had come in trying to discover what this island cafe meant. And we had no idea that was going to happen. We met people from Guam, from Venezuela, which is not an island, yet we still let them come in and enjoy it, and got plenty of recipes. And I found people loved the idea that it wasn't a specific island, that it wasn't a Jamaican restaurant or a Hawaiian restaurant or anything like that. People came in and started to share recipes. People came in and showed me how to cook traditional cuisine from all over the world. And within a month, we kind of looked at ourselves and went, okay, so all our dreams have come true. Now what do we do? Well, let's invite more people into it. Hmm. We were kind of playing around with it. We had, you mentioned the boards with the menus on the walls. That was our only menu for about 4 months. We did finally end up going to a printed menu where people could look at and see all the different garnishes and fun stuff that we put on there. But for the longest time, it was just, there's the menu, it's on the wall. I think the fun part for me as a chef, as an artist, was I started learning these things. Well, I had to get them out. So we started running a feature every day, a different feature.
Every day?
And posting it on Facebook. That's how people would find out what the feature is. And so now we have this kind of, you know, following of what's your feature? Because it could be from anywhere. And I've had so much fun kind of digging deep into my culinary palate and getting out flavors and things and pulling together. I do get in trouble sometimes for mix matching cultures, but I take liberty. That's what we do.
Excuse me.
Someone said today, it's a melting pot of melting pots. One thing I've discovered about island cuisine is no island stands alone. It's all islands are influenced by those that travel there and leave there or have conquered it. You know, it's just amazing to see the depth of culture that is just right there in the center of all these islands. They all seem similar, but they all have a different story. A lot of the cuisine have the same names, but they don't look the same. And so as I started to unpack some of these fun little things, I started to find this amazing connection of cultures. And so each island is actually a melting pot of neighboring islands and people who have visited the island. They bring it in. Well, Zeke's kind of is doing that. I had some things that I wanted to do that was fun. But mostly the people that come in help design that menu. They asked for what they wanted, and we tried to make it happen. And when it worked well, it stayed.
Hmm.
So we're all in this together, I guess, is kind of the thing. We were hoping that would be the case, but never dreamed it would be this cool.
Gosh, I couldn't imagine a restaurant where a guest would come back and show you how to make a certain dish that they know. I think that's fascinating. You're open to that. You're not, well, I'm the chef here. It's a different way of going. And the fact that you're receptive to that and welcome that. I think that's terrific.
It's changed my life. Yeah, huh. It's really given me an opportunity to move forward in ways I never dreamed of.
Well, let's talk about the food. Like, you have rice and beans and chicken and meat, and I saw you at the grocery store and you had lots of spices, a bucket full of spices. It's
right.
Like, how do you come up with a food? How do you come up with a menu? How do you come up with a meal? Combinations?
Well, it starts with inspiration. Usually it's a request or a suggestion. And at that, then it's a matter of discovery. Then I'm going down the path of trying to find the ingredients, find the flavors. One of the frustrating things for me, I will get a suggestion. I'll make something, even follow a recipe meticulously, but I don't know if it tastes authentic until someone from that place comes in. And we have a friend from Venezuela who came in, and he came in on a Sunday. We were closed and spent 3 hours teaching me how to cook different things.
Mm.
We make these Venezuelan hot dogs. That sounds crazy, but they're just the way they make them is so amazing. But then he also showed me some traditional stuff, arepas and empanadas, just Venezuelan style. And there's this potato salad, and it's got beets in it, so it's pink. You've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it. So we ran it as a feature, and he came in, you know, that week, and I watched him take a bite, and I watched him go home for a minute. Like, he went, oh, that's it. And that right there kind of just fused in place. This is what I want to do with the most of my time and energy.
Hmm. To have that reaction in your faces.
I want to connect and see people go home, and I want them to bring that home here and share it with other people. Because that's what he had done. He had shared what his experience and his life and everything with us. We reproduced it. We put it out there for the world to try. he got to take part in that and experience home all at the same time.
Nice. Sweet. Sweet experience.
Oh, my word. That was amazing.
Yeah. It's the joy of being a chef.
So let's do that more.
That is. The life of a chef is somewhat interesting. I heard that it was said nobody chooses to be a chef, that cooking chooses you.
That's definitely true.
It's a calling.
Yeah. There's a difference between a cook and a chef. There are a lot of amazing cooks out there that do have a lot of amazing things.
Is this craftsman, artist, cook, chef?
I'd love for it to be that simple. Like I said earlier, the chef part has so many different expressions. There are managerial chefs who are just really amazing at making a lot of things happen. There are a lot of creative chefs who aren't so wonderful at execution of multiple operations, but they come up with the most amazing dishes that blow your mind, starting with your eyes, and then, you know, then the flavors and all those things. So there's this artistry aspect, there's this managerial, you know, kind of ordered aspect to it. There's all kinds of aspects, kind of expected to do everything. So you're always good at one part and not good at another.
Mm.
It's best to have a team of chefs or creative people or people involved that can move all those things forward.
What are you?
I am definitely on the creative side. The money part really doesn't matter to me, although I can crunch the numbers. I have enough experience with it. It's not the part I'd like to do. I also love to put a team together, to find people who want this to find them. You mentioned that it's kind of like uncovering the discovery part. You see inside somebody something. They have a desire. They say they want to be a cook. You bring them on board, and it just seems like they're, you know, all knuckles, no fingers. But there's still that desire in them, so you just have to find that place. Well, maybe they're a baker, and they don't know it. Helping people discover what they're made for, how they can engage with their desire, cultivating the desire to a point where it comes out and finds its expression. That's the part that I love the most.
You're like a coach then.
Oh, that's a great word. I never thought of it that way.
You're a quarterback. Oh, you're a defensive lineman. Oh, you shouldn't play there. You should play over here.
Mm-hmm.
So you read them and you know them. How do you read people to be a chef? I mean, how do you know this?
Hmm.
The way they move, the way they act, what they brighten up to?
Yeah, well, I think it's that. I think there's people lean into things and people shy away from things, and you can pick up on that pretty quickly. When you see people hesitating, you find out why. If it's something you can overcome, great, we move forward. If it's something that's fundamentally in the way, let's not beat that horse to death, right? I'm not a believer in you have to do all things to get there. Hence the school I chose. You know, they had a completely different department for baking and pastry because that's not my thing. I got my A's in the classes, but I never wanted to do that for a living, not even for 1 hour.
Whipped cream?
Oh, no.
Cakes?
Oy,
frosting?
No. No, you're killing me. Yeah, that's punishment for me. And I have friends who could spend their lifetimes just baking away.
Yeah.
And look at what I did. And look at this. And to me, I'm like, wow. That's not for me.
Different position then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you're a creative chef.
Yeah.
And then you see that in other people.
You see, it's all about the connection. If people are willing to connect to you and to what they're doing, then you can like work with it. If people are out to prove themselves to something, they're kind of on their own, you know, until they decide they're out of room, so to speak.
Hmm.
So I guess that's kind of the environment we try to build at Zeke's, on both sides of the counter.
Mm-hmm. On both sides of the counter.
For guests and employees.
What do you mean?
Well, a lot of our employees are former volunteers who are former guests.
Ah.
Interesting concept.
That's true, because every time I've been in, you have newer people behind the counter. It's like I've never seen them before.
Right. We had all volunteer staff up until August.
How can a restaurant have an all volunteer staff?
That's what my wife said. Who's going to volunteer to wash dishes?
Right.
Now that's the joke, right? I'll wash dishes for free food.
Uh-huh.
We basically said, you can have a meal here on your shift and you'll have half price on any meal if you come and help us. And it started with one shift. Somebody said, okay, I'll work a shift. And within a few weeks, people were covering the register. People were learning how to cook. And over the course of time, we had a full staff of volunteers.
Sweet.
Unbelievable.
Golly.
One particular family from Guam, the Cruz Mafnis family, basically adopted us, taught me amazing things about island cuisine and culture. And the matriarch of the family volunteered for 3 months every day at lunch. Every day. Just to be a part of what was going on.
And they want to be around the food.
And so we hired most of our volunteers.
How interesting. Mm-hmm. How very interesting. We're speaking with Chef Stewart, Jason Stewart, Stu, Chef Stu, his wife Jessica, he and she own Zeke's Island Cafe on Kimberly Road, over there where Popeye's Pizza used to be. This culinary palate that you talked about, talk about that. What is this knowledge of food that you have?
Interesting. Knowledge of food is just like anything else. You collect information and then you work it out. And so you can have all the information in your head. I was speaking earlier about recipes of cultures I've not experienced. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it tastes correct till I've worked it out.
What is correct?
Well, as close to the traditional culture. So I know it tastes, I know I followed the recipes. So when you talk about the flavor palette, the way that we look at the food, the way that we see it coming apart in flavors and layers, I guess that's kind of the thing. I have a strong foundation. The school that I went to was very good about laying that foundation, and that we layer the flavors, and you start with a fond and you get your colors right as far as, you know, your textures and things like that. And once you can master those things, then you can do anything with it. So you have, your techniques down, you get your skill set in place where you can cook on the different mediums, you know, of heat, whether it's in an oven or on a stovetop or in a fryer or you're baking or whatever it is. And you get those things to where you have muscle memory, you have flavor memory, you have experience of what didn't work. So you know what to try and what you can push. I think a lot of food the cutting edge of food is how far can we push this? And that's where you find the diners that are looking for the next best thing. And I think most chefs are in that place. They're trying to push to the next level to get something to a place it hasn't been before.
Mm. And how do you do that? By combining different cultures, different flavors?
Mostly it's risk. You get used to getting things wrong. You get used to failure.
Yeah, but you can't be a failure for too long. I mean, you're going to get something right.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying is if you're tied up with everything coming out perfectly, you miss the opportunity to discover something new. So you can have meticulously executed recipes from a traditional cookbook. But when you go off the path, so to speak, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that every chef does that. I don't know that every chef wants to, but there are a group of chefs who are kind of always off the beaten path,
mm-hmm.
always trying to discover the next thing. And so we push on things. So that's what we did here at this restaurant. So you said I have rice and I have beans and I have chicken. Right. But I've pushed on some of these things. There's characteristics. There's the sweetness of our teriyaki sauce. How sweet should it be to be traditional? Well, I don't know. So I'm going to do what makes sense to me as a chef from my 25 years of making this type of thing. Now I'm going to lean into it, borrow what I've understood from information. So read books, talk to people, blogs, recipes, whatever, and take that information, apply it with my knowledge and my past experience, which is a lot of not getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
And lean into it. And then the next step is, how did you enjoy it? What are your comments, criticisms?
I love the flavors as it rolled down. I love the aftertaste that it left in my mouth. I love the way it kind of blew out my nose and my nasal passages, and that wonderful sweetness and the sauce and the textures of it. All those things. And the visual of it, too, with this nice little cracker that you have sticking in there. Yeah. Very interesting. So it's visual. It's nasal smell, it's taste buds, and it's the feeling of the whole thing. It's almost like a symphony. It's like you're consuming this music of food and time, and then it's done, and you have this empty bowl.
But the connection's solid.
Yes, it is. And then the people you are with as you're eating, too, and you're all enjoying this food. Very interesting. Well, we're speaking with Chef Stu of Zeke's Island Cafe. Let's take another break right now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Geneseo Art League Gallery at 107 South State Street in Geneseo, The Wood Art Show, works by Jim Dayton, Bob Benson, Carl Smith, and Warren Hadley. Hours are 11 to 5, Wednesday through Saturday. At Smith Studio and Gallery at 124 South State Street in Geneseo, works by David Smith, Colleen Curry, and other featured artists. Hours are Tuesday and Thursday, 10 to 9 p.m., Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from 10 to 5. At the Renee Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in Eclair through November 30th, Colorants, featuring Emily Christensen. Hours are 11 to 5 every day except Sunday. At Rostock's at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of November, Buoyant, works by Amanda Chase. Hours are 11 to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the Galesburg Civic Art Center at 114 East Main Street in Galesburg through November 18th, works by Claire Ashley. From November 18th through December 5th, works by Nancy Davis. From November 21st through the end of the year, works by Jared Lacey and B. Thomas Lytle. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 to 4:30, Saturday 10:30 to 3. At the Buchanan Center for the Arts on the Square in Monmouth through January 17th, Jim Weidel's exhibition. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, Saturdays from 10 to 2. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Thursday evening 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street, Dubuque, through the end of November, Homage to the Tall Grass Prairie, watercolors by George Olson. On continuing exhibit, the Grant Wood Gallery. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area. Our talk, Chef Stu is with us, Jason Stewart from Zeke's Island Cafe, that toddling town. Marvelous. It's a sweet little cafe up there on Kimberly Road where the old Popeye's Chicken used to be. Bill Douglas turned me onto it many moons ago, and we've been going ever since. And it's always fun to talk to an artist chef. You were talking about the different kinds of chefs. You have the managerial chefs. You have the creative chefs. You have all the different whole spectrum of chefs, like a symphony orchestra. Where do you fit in? And it seems that your talent lies in not only in creating new foods and being receptive to new ideas and new combinations and being eager to learn new foods, but also putting together a team. I think that's a marvelous characteristic. And people, for some reason or other, are attracted to your restaurant and to your staff.
the flavors are always terrific, and that juice that you have there, I like that that juice. I always grab that. Let's talk about layering flavors. It's like I'd love to just to pick your brain of all your chef knowledge, but layering flavors. You mentioned that earlier. Does it make a difference which layer you have on top or below, or that you're biting through? How does that work?
You know, I think that I may be particular in this, but I do tend to redesign food if it's brought to me in the wrong order. I don't know why. It's like you said, I kind of can see the flavors. But the flavors have different levels in and of themselves. You have texture and you have kind of the pushback. I call it pushback. So, you know, mashed potatoes have a number 2 on a scale of 1 to 10 on pushback, right? You could eat mashed potatoes and not know you ate anything. Huh. But a steak, you're going to chew on and you're going to enjoy. And so there's this combination when you put mashed potatoes and steak on the same fork. You've got something going on there, right?
Combinations.
Right? So in that aspect, when you start designing a dish, you just do what makes sense. Well, that's what I say, but to me, it makes sense. And to other people, it's just layers of food. So my wife is, she really enjoys the tilapia fish tacos. For a long time, she special ordered them her way. And she eventually, after a few months, gave in, acquiesced, and said, I'll try them the way you're making them for everyone else, because they seem to be loving them. And she just commented, she said, wow, how did you do this? And she's been living with me for a long time, eating this food that I've been making for a long time. Just didn't occur to her that the way that I see and think is in this layered flavor effect. What's going to happen when you take a bite? What's going to happen as you chew? What's going to happen when you're going for the next bite? And so to have the warm, soft tortilla on the outside and the cool calypso coleslaw underneath that's creamy and still crunchy, and then the next layer is going to be the protein, the fish or the chicken or the pork, whatever you've chosen. Then you're going to have some cilantro and green onions and sour cream that's kind of hold that all together. Then you've got cheese and tomatoes and carrots and green. It's just, but the way that it all crunches, I don't know, really. Like I didn't write it down on a piece of paper and say we should do it this way. I had some ingredients in front of me and built it. And that's how we developed that. And everybody loves it. I don't know that I could accidentally
you know,
do
you,
that.
You know it then. When you were describing that taco, I was like, I'll take one. You can hand that right over. So you know what the effect is going to be. There's an intuitive knowledge that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. Do you keep a recipe book? Do you have one?
I don't.
No.
My biggest problem is trying to replicate. So I do finally get recipes down and passed on out of my hands to where they can be reproduced pretty consistently.
But it's not the same thing.
I don't really ever have a desire to make the same thing twice. That's everyone else's expectation. And it's the need for the business. If I want people to come back, they need to know it's going to be good. So that's the part I get done with. Once that project is done, I move on to the next thing. We're going to build new food.
And then you have other people make it?
Well, at the same time, I'm finding key people that are amazing and want to do that part. See how this works? You pair the team building with the creative structure, and you give a flexible system where people can come in and come out where they belong and where they succeed and flourish. And the food should do the same thing. And that's the customer's experience. Hopefully.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, let's talk about zesty Jamaican jerk chicken. What's the deal with that?
Well, it's, again, something I've taken liberty with. I've never been to Jamaica. We did have a booth at Jamaica My Weekend, which was a blast. And I got to go around and poke my head in and ask questions of all the tents and things that had people doing traditional Jamaican food. It is actually... it's borrowed recipe from the Pacific style cooking called adobo, where you kind of simmer food, chicken or pork or whatever, in a mix of, you know, vegetables and things like that. I borrowed that cooking technique and applied it to the Jamaican seasonings that we make in-house, and kind of do this odd combination. That's where I cross the boundaries. I take liberty with, you know, my experiences. I understand where I want to go, where I want to end up with the food.
You know where it's going to end up?
I have an idea. And then again, it's that failure thing. When it doesn't work, we're going to learn from that, move on to the next thing. And hopefully we get to a place we can reproduce and people will enjoy.
Nice. Those are the credentials and those are the criteria of it. Mm-hmm. How interesting. What is this about gluten-free? Can you explain that? And you have a part of your menu which is gluten-free.
Interestingly enough, we started off with a vegetarian menu. We had a lot of vegetarian requests, and rather than winging it every time someone came in, we decided to write it down, be intentional. That's been an amazing thing. The next requests were, what's gluten-free? And I began having to speak to people in line. I'm sorry, what can't you eat? What can you eat? And how can we help you? So what we ended up doing was going through our cupboards, so to speak, looking at every ingredient that we use from anything that we buy commercially, and found that most things that we were buying we couldn't use because it had some form of gluten in it.
And what is gluten?
Gluten is part of the wheat that the disease celiac has. It's an intestinal issue. It's not a pretty thing to talk about, but it's definitely miserable for people who suffer to end up eating gluten when they shouldn't. So, out of respect, we want to make sure that we're truly gluten-free. So we decided to make our own seasonings because we couldn't find a gluten-free version. Well, that one thing has absolutely skyrocketed our flavors. I was fine with some of the commercial seasonings that I was purchasing, but when I started making them my own, I started researching and seeing, you know, who does what and looking at different recipes. And so now we actually have a Caribbean seasoning that we call our dirty seasoning. It's how we make our dirty rice. And then also we use it in our Jamaican recipes and things like that. We would have never discovered that had we not had conversations with people who had limitations in their diet. So the limits actually brought us further down
the road. How often that happens?
Crazy, isn't
it? You advance by limitations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So gluten-free, so spices, you are combining your spices, which you buy, and then you make your own flavor of spice.
We layer those flavors.
Interesting. So the layering, you're almost like photoshopping different layers of food on top of each other, knowing how they're going to come out and inside. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating art form that you make, and you get to eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you cook at home?
I do.
Macaroni and cheese or something?
Right. What do I do on my time off? Go shopping and go home and cook and have fun.
What is it, this cooking? It's like it's just overtaken your life. You're almost like this zealous missionary for food.
Honestly, it's amazing that you would say that. I really see the world in need of connection. I think people spending time together, understanding each other, is really key to each person's success as well as community success. And so food, I think, is one medium that everyone agrees on. Everybody's always hungry. Everybody makes time to eat. So I think it's a great avenue for connectedness. And so I'm not sure where that goes. I'm not sure, obviously I wish it would, you know, solve all the world's problems. But I know that people connecting over food solves relational issues. People have to set things aside to stop and eat. And so I think people that are challenged in their cuisine will be challenged and open to ideas. So if you can get your mind open to ideas, then you have an opportunity to see the other person, no matter who it is, whether it's someone in your family or someone you've never met, see them as see other possibilities in people. So to me, Zeke's is this really cool way of kind of opening our collective minds and hearts to each other. I've learned so much. Things I was completely ignorant to, about just the way culture embraces culture. The whole idea of the melting pot of melting pots. Every particular people have their own identity as well as their humanity. So there's this crossroads there that happens around food. I can't explain it. I'm just a part of it. I'm really really happy to be a part of it.
Was this something that you discovered as a child? Camus said that an artist seeks to reproduce the three or four experiences that they have in which their heart unfolded. It's like how very interesting. You know, for me, it's arches and tiles and color and landscape. And for you, it's people getting together around food.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Childhood memory?
You know, I don't think so. You know, honestly, it's pretty simple. I got stuck on a bus ride. Planes weren't running back in the 90s. Something happened. And I read an entire the Prudhomme family cookbook. Paul Prudhomme, you may have remembered, you know, was a big guy, and now he's not a big guy, and now, you know, whatever. But Cajun was just kind of coming into its own in the 90s. And the family had different reasons for cooking different things because they grew different crops in their backyards. And I just encountered this amazing family of people who had all this stuff jammed into a book, and they had stories. And I went, wow, there's more to this food thing than just food. It was the people behind the food. And I think ever since then, I've kind of really linked culture and food together and really wanted to just tear it apart and see what's inside.
Hmm. So who your heroes would be? Chef Prudhomme?
My hero. Chef heroes?
Yeah.
Honestly, nobody with their name on it or their face on any pictures or anything like that. I've come across some amazing people in the kitchens who just pour their hearts out every day. And they love their craft, and they don't care if they're making more money next year than this year. They want the next person to experience what they have to offer.
Sound like an artist to me. Very good, very good. Well, Jason, we've arrived at the end of our journey. This is fascinating. Looking into your art, Jason Stewart, Chef Jason Stewart, Stu, Chef Stu, his wife Jessica, they own Zeke's Island Cafe. Your sign, I go back and forth with your sign. I love your sign. I hate your sign. anyway,
perfect. That's a perfect response.
Okay, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 2, and then a break, and then 5 to 7, and you're closed on Sundays. On East Kimberley Road. Time for the last question, Chef. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for young chefs?
Cultivate that desire. Find out what it is that's driving you in that direction. Whatever it is that's driving you in that direction, it's available. If you want the military-style run kitchen where everybody has their station in place and you can direct that, then lean into that and do that. If it's art, you know, pour into other mediums as well and pull that in. And for most of it, just chase your heart.
Excellent. Well said. That's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts, 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.